posture of the case. The opponent colleagues have alleged certain deficiencies in the presentation of the case to the appellate court, lack of citation to the record and the like. I'm not going to go over everyone that they make mention of. Can you explain to the court how we're able to overcome the suggestions made by your opponent colleagues?
At this point, no, I'm not. I'm not able to recall what they said, and I'm not able to say. But I believe I have cited everything to the record. I've cited the transcript.
Okay, in your brief, let's look at Simons Vera 1, 3, and 4. In your brief, you cite to the court's ruling and only and do not cite to any point in the record where the incitements of error were preserved.
We objected repeatedly in the record, and I pointed out those objections in my brief for each one of the things that we objected to.
Counsel, maybe I can help you a little
yes.
bit on this. In reference to Judge Alston's question as far as referring back to the pages in the appendix where you have preserved your appeal, my recollection is that in some of those you have them down in the footnotes rather than up in the body, so it's there. It may not be procedurally in the right location, but it's there. Is that correct? Or is my memory not correct?
Basically, I use footnotes for all of my citations and for all of my...
Right, and you use those to cite back to the page numbers as well in the appendix, did you not, I think, some
yes.
of them?
Okay, that's what I do. I refer back to the appendix.
Okay.
And, of course, by this one, I'm sorry, sometimes what happens is when we write these things, we have to write it based on the transcript, and then when the transcript is created into an appendix, we have to make the transition to go back and replace the page numbers with what they become in the appendix. And it's possible that on an occasion... If it's possible that I missed one and I have the wrong page, I apologize for that.
And counsel, if we look in corralling all of this, or attempting to, because there's a number of issues, but in your assignments of errors number 3 and 5, and I think Judge Alston was referring to, also in reference to those assignment of errors, you did not cite any legal principles or authority in reference to those. You want to speak as to that?
Well, with regard to 5, I think what I cited was the rules of evidence that had been, I thought the court had simply overlooked, but it overruled my objections. In 5, we were attempting to show that my client, notwithstanding a diagnosis that she had bipolar 1 disorder her entire life, had notwithstanding that, been able to raise 4 other children, some of whom were adults, and the court refused to allow us to do it. He only allowed us to go into more recent child-raising activities of hers, but their expert had said, well, she suffered from this her entire life. So we thought it was relevant that they be able to reconcile how she could do that with bipolar 1 back then, but not do it now.
Why do the 2 adult children live with someone else?
I think the 2 adult children...
The other 2 older children.
The oldest ones are the one... There are 2 adult children and then 2, I think, teenage children.
Yeah, why aren't they living with this woman?
They visit her. She testified that they visit with her regularly, but they actually live in the same house where their older siblings live and where their dad lives. But she actually has legal custody of them. That was her testimony.
Okay, but my question is, why don't they live with her?
Well, because they are in high school, and they were already attending a high school. They attended Liberty High School in Bealton, and they didn't want to change high school because she lives in Front Royal now.
Okay.
That's why she had a 3-bedroom apartment, and she'd gotten it. And she said that those boys regularly visited her but weren't actually living with her because they wanted to continue.
So if she's living in Front Royal, they would go to Warren County High School as opposed to Liberty High School, which apparently is the high school that they've been at for a while.
That's right. In fact, she testified that the reason that the girls were taken by CSB was because the day she went to meet the respite care parents from her church, she actually got an emergency call from Liberty to go take care of her son who's having a diabetic emergency.
Counsel, I think everyone on this court would agree that the termination of parental rights is one of the most harshest things that an individual can endure in a civil context. I call it the capital punishment of of civil cases. And it appears from looking at this record that the trial court went through great analysis to essentially come to the conclusion that the circumstances which rendered these children placed in foster care originally had not been resolved pending the final determination of the termination case. And that was the trial court's determination. Why, based upon the standard of review, which is we must defer to the factual determination of the trial court unless they're clearly erroneous, how can we reverse that determination?
Well, because, Your Honor, their exhibit number 4 contradicted almost all of the evidence given by their expert witness. And their exhibit number 4 were the Community Service Board records that were tendered by our expert witness, called as their witness, for the purpose of just authenticating those records. For one thing, what they did, and I'm going to go back to Judge Chapin's question about number 3. The court is entitled to great deference in deciding which expert to believe. But the expert that they brought, Dr. Carter, all he did was give them some testing to do, and he testified that he didn't even administer it. He had interns and other people in his office doing it, and he was just going from room to room kind of checking on people and never actually even met with Mrs. Longerbean until February when he told her what the results of the testing were. And the court said that makes him a better expert, whereas Dr. Schmall met with her 4 times after she was released from the hospital in collaboration with a psychiatrist from the Community Services Board where Dr. Schmall lived. And he actually wrote a letter saying she does have bipolar 1, but she has returned to the ability to be able to raise children now. Dr. Carter said without even meeting her with the children, he could say that given the children's needs and her needs, she was completely unable to raise them.
Isn't that exactly what trial courts are supposed to do? I think this is the better witness. Isn't that what they're supposed to do?
It is, but I think that he did it incorrectly based on the evidence that was presented.
So you're asking us to determine the relative credibility of the two experts?
Yes, and the other question that to answer Judge Alston's question, Judge, we had Judge Wisdom like we did the other case, and he did his work. He's a great guy. He did not take a recess to look at the paperwork that had been turned in. If he had, he would have realized that Dr. Schmall met with her personally time after time after time, and Dr. Carter only really met with her once and was not really qualified to give the expert testimony that Dr. Schmall could. That doesn't mean that he had to discount him as an expert. It just means that Schmall was in a better position to tell him what her situation was at that place and time. And he said nothing had changed. She was still better qualified or now requalified to be able to raise the children. And that's why he simply chose the wrong witness, and he did so without really explaining why, other than the fact that Dr. Carter gave her some tests to do. But Dr. Carter admitted that he only really met with her for about an hour, whereas Dr. Schmall met with her for longer.
So is it your position that every circumstance that caused her to lose the children in the first place had been remedied? And I'll let you answer the question. You can.
Absolutely. She got a job. She had a home. She did all of the things in the laundry list they gave her. And Holly Anderson, who was the social worker, went down the laundry list when she was testifying. She did this, and counsel asked, is there anything she didn't do? And she said she didn't completely do 3 things, okay? And one of them was to continue to get therapy. And the other one, the second one, was that she was inconsistent with a home-based counselor, and the third one was that she didn't demonstrate the ability to place her kids' needs above her own. As I said, I objected to that as conclusory, and the court overruled me and allowed her to present that into evidence. But the
just interrupt you, please? You just sort of cruised right by the issue of therapy, and of course, because of her diagnosis, therapy is, I think all the experts at DSS, they all agree that that's important for her, ongoing therapy. Well, she was taking some type of home-based therapy, which was not what was part of her foster care plan and recommended. Isn't that true?
No, the home-based therapy was required by the foster care
okay.
plan. And the home-based therapist, Vicki, would go visit her on Mondays at her home.
But they wanted additional therapy in a psychologist or a therapist office, isn't that's my recall.
Yes, and she testified that she was seeing Dr. Cardwell from Valley Health in Woodstock, Virginia, after she moved to Warren County, and that Dr. Cardwell did not recommend anything else, but she was willing to do whatever he recommended, so she got involved in a church group that was giving was therapeutic in nature.
Counselor, you can save the rest of your time for rebuttal if you'd like.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. You have 7.5 minutes, sir.
I think the guardian ad litem has requested that she be allowed 3 minutes.
Okay, so you can have 15 minus 3, 12.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Robert Beard, Vanderbilt Prosecutor, and Shane Hinton, City Council for the Appellee Faulkner Department of Social Services.
Counsel, if we start with the predicate that the termination of parental rights is a very harsh result, a harsh sanction in a case like this. And if we were to believe your opponent colleague's representation that his client had done everything that had been asked by the Fauquier County Department of Social Services, why should we, in this case, even with the standard of review, not remand this case for final or further determination?
So you're saying that if you find from the record that she has done everything she was required to do.
Mm-hmm.
In the hypothetical, if you found that, I think you would have to say she did everything she was required
okay,
to
now
do.
Now, your colleague has said essentially that she has done everything that she was required to do. What would be your response to that?
Our response is that she didn't. One of the things she was required to do is to demonstrate an ability to provide safety for the children and to follow through with her mental health treatment. Judge Chaffin is correct. There was therapy that is in the foster care worker's testimony that they wanted her to do additional therapy. She could maintain consistently and steadfast, but she didn't need additional therapy in spite of the representation.
But the one point that you make, and I appreciate your response, counsel, but the one point you make is more conclusory in nature. In other words, we're predicting what might be the case in the future. What I would be looking for from this record is what static determinations suggest that she is not able to provide an appropriate, suitable home life for the children.
I think, again, we have Dr. Carter's testimony, and with respect, I think Judge Wisnett was entitled to decide which yeah. expert he found most credible, who said that mother was not capable of achieving that level of, did not have the capacity to provide that level of safety for the children. So that's one predictive factor. The other is the observations of the foster care worker. I was looking at the transcript this morning. We had a case started at 9:32 and ended at 4:35. So we were presenting approximately 14 months of history in about 8 hours. So we have to telescope a lot in the time. I decided the collective facts rule that I think, even though it's 1875, is the earliest time I can find for it, still seems to be the law in Virginia. You know, it's good law. And it's the observation that worker said, I've watched them, I've worked with them for a year, and we're still missing in this
It seems to me, from looking at this record, that the biggest struggle that Ms. Longerbeam has is her bipolar disorder. I think that everyone would agree with that conclusion. And also that there's some concern about self-medication to deal with her bipolar. But she's never going to not be bipolar. It's not something that you're cured of, from the way I understand the medical science. So if she is bipolar and she is doing everything that's being asked of her to deal with her bipolar syndrome, why is she deserving, for lack of a better way of putting it, of losing her children? And I agree that foster parents are providing a great environment and the children are thriving, and if all things were equal, that would be the best place for them. However, the mother's got rights here.
I understood that, Your Honor. not so much a matter that the mother's, that this is a punishment for the mother, that she somehow deserves that she deserves this. This is something that the court has to look at and say, is this, is she able to adequately to maintain a safe, healthy, and secure environment for the children? And if she's not able to do that, even if there's an underlying organic problem, then that's not, quote, good cause to say, well, we can't terminate because this is a problem she's never going to be able to fix. Dr. Schmall said in his letter, I believe, was so sick. By this point, I think you guys know this record better than I do, but his evaluation took place much, much earlier and spoke to a specific point in time. We're looking at an ongoing situation that's going to literally go up and down. That's what bipolar illness is. It goes up, it goes down, and there are times when it's not active. But what we're saying is we've got relatively young children. We're going to return them to a home that is not stable, that we have not been able to remedy that. Mom has been able to demonstrate a follow-through on her own therapy to maintain what needs to be maintained to provide for the safety and health of children. So I understand from the parents' view it is harsh, but from the children's view it's a question of their safety.
Well, what does the case law suggest as to who we should, as an appellate court, most focus on, either the best interest of the children or the parental rights?
The case law says you have to look at all, I say three, and I think this court says four factors. The ability to make substantial progress on the plan, the best interest of the children, the age of the child, and whether an effort's been made to find relative placements. So you have to have all four. You can find, for the purpose of argument, you can find, yes, termination is in the best interest of the children, but you can find, no, the parents remedy the situation. Yeah. Therefore, we will not terminate. Well, I think that's responsive to your question.
It is. It is. And Judge Chafin and I were both juvenile court judges, and I will speak from my experience. I don't know if her experience was similar. Oftentimes, we'd come into court and have these termination of parental rights cases, and the children would be in a foster home, and the foster parents were incredible. The children were thriving. The children were advancing in school. Medical issues had been addressed, and the instinct is to look over there and say, things are good. Why do I want to upset this? Well, the reason why you might want to consider upsetting it is because that mother or that father who's facing that draconian remedy of having his or her parental rights terminated is losing his children, losing her children forever as far as a rights standpoint is concerned. And so you almost have to check yourself and say, even though the kids are thriving, this person over here has significant rights and prerogatives also, and I need to be careful about taking those rights and prerogatives away from them. How do you strike that balance?
We strike that balance by asking, has the parent remedied the situation? Is the situation now one where it's safe to return it to? And I understand, yes, you can't have a situation where the foster home is so good you just don't want to take them out. But the parents have done everything. In this case, and I'm coming back here, what I think Judge Wisnan did in this,
ultimately didn't the judge conclude that within the prior 12 months, pursuant to what is the requirement of the statute, and of course that's what I agree with Judge Alston, it's very difficult, but you've got the framework of the statute that has to guide you, and so within the 12 months, didn't the judge conclude that that mother had not substantially remedied the issues that brought the children into foster care, and secondly, that it was in the best interest of the children, or you can turn those around and say, number one, it's in the best interest, and secondly, they didn't remedy the issues that brought the children into foster care within a timely fashion as required by the
He certainly case. Made both those findings. They were embodied in his written order. Was it this panel? I think I just got an opinion from this panel yesterday. It says the judge speaks through his written orders. He did say determinations in the best interest and his addresses from the bench, if it's in the written order.
That's sufficient.
That's sufficient. And in this case, he made both those findings when it failed to remedy, and it's in the best interest of the children.
And I thought he said it, and of course, there was a voluminous record, so I thought he said it in the record as well, but I know it's in the order.
Yes, it's in the order, and he said, and I'm looking at page 349 in the transcript. I'm not sure what that is in the full appendix, but my transcript is 349. It's near the very end, near the end of the last five pages of the trial transcript. Between the problems that each of you have, speaking to parents, and the problems of children, you're not able to take care of them in this particular matter. In other words, in spite of the treatment that you're getting, and it was clear that she is getting treatment, in spite of that treatment, she was not able to care for the children. And I think that meets the standard you're referring to, and it addresses, if imperfectly, the question that Judge Alston was raising. That's the balance. Even though you did check, even though you did complete items 1 to 12, 13 in here is the killer, and you're not able to care for the children. That's not a sufficient defense to termination under many cases from this court. And that's the best I can answer your question. Ultimately, can she take care of the children?
Yes, sir. All right, Ms. Battistoni, you have the rest of the time, ma'am. Thank you, counsel.
Morning.
Ms. Battistoni, obviously your position as guardian ad litem is one that's focusing on the best interest of the children. That's your primary responsibility. Do you believe that in the circumstances, speaking from the standpoint of being the GAL in this case, that the best interest of the children trumps all of the other circumstances that are presented in this
Absolutely
case?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think that whenever we take one of these cases when children are placed in a foster care, the initial goal is to return the children home. And to return the children home to a healthy, safe family. And the department, as you read from the record, tried to do that. I really want to focus the court's attention on the issue of the therapy. Appellant states in her brief that she actually did do therapy. She really didn't, Your Honors. The person that came to the home was a parenting coach. You heard Mom in the testimony say that she took walks with her and did those types of things. I'd also like to point out that the testimony isn't the only thing that's in this record. There's medical records, there's foster care plans, and there's Dr. Schmall's records from the Community Services Board. In his discharge summary in December, he notes that Mom was inconsistent and in attending her therapy. He, in fact, only saw her 2 times in a year and a half. And when he made his wrote his letter, he testified on cross-examination that he had no idea that she had a diagnosis of alcohol dependency, which is a serious diagnosis when you have a primary diagnosis of bipolar 1. That alcohol dependency impacted what she did the day the children were in the hotel room, and it continued to impact her ability to care for the children. When Mom testified, she was asked about therapy, she stated that, "I rely solely on Jesus, and I am involved in my church, and so I go to a group there, and Jesus is my therapy." She acknowledged that she wasn't participating in the therapy that the department wanted her to participate in. And while certainly going to church is wonderful, it does not address therapy needed for a serious disorder like bipolar disorder. In addition, the children had special needs. These are not children that they have special needs. One of the children has anxiety disorder. She has hyperactivity, and she has other disorders that Dr. Carter testified make her especially susceptible to an environment that's unstructured and any kind. In fact, he said that Mom's condition could actually exacerbate the child's condition. And because Mom wasn't continuing in her therapy, that's not a small part of the foster care plan. You can't think of that, all of these items, as equal to each other. This is a major part of what she was required to do by the foster care plan, and because she didn't do it, didn't get to the level that was needed to substantially remedy the circumstances that led to the children being placed in foster care. If we do talk about the children's best interests, then While certainly, as you said, foster care homes can be wonderful, and this one is, there's no doubt about it. But they have a right, and the court has paramount as its concern, the circuit court does, to protect these children. It wasn't a simple situation that led to their placement in foster care and continuing care. Mom is not only has a history of bipolar, which was not lifelong. It started in 2009, which when she had her first break, and she ended up hospitalized for at least 10 days. Testimony was inconsistent on that. It was some, her daughter said 6 weeks. The appellant said 10 days. When she was medicated, and then what led, she stopped taking her medication 4 months before this incident in the hospital. Removed the children from the home they had lived in for quite some time. Went to a hotel, despite relatives and other people saying, we do not think that's what you should do. It's not in your children's best interests. Okay.
Thank you, counsel. Your time's expired. I appreciate the efficiency and proficiency of your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sir, you have about a minute.
I'll try to go backwards.
Yes, sir.
I specifically asked Mom if Jesus was the answer to her therapy needs, and she said, of course not. She said, I would get whatever therapy I was required.
Well, part of the sobriety test has to recognize a creator that has greater power than you do, I think. Yeah.
And it was 10 days, not 6 weeks, because the Community Services Board, that's their Exhibit 4, says it was 10 days. It was either 9, 10, or 11. We were not sure if it was 9 or 11. We know this, but the kids have special needs, but lots of kids have special needs. You don't remove kids that have special needs. And Dr. Small did not see her 2 times. He saw her 4 times. And he did say that she had an alcohol dependence problem, but for whatever reason, he didn't figure that out after she was hospitalized for 10 days and then came to the Community Services Board and saw him for the next 6 months. We don't know why. Best interests are an important part of this. They're not the only part. They're an important part, but return home is the most important part if it can be done. And this statute and this theory requires her to remedy substantially. I'm saying she didn't just do it substantially. She did it as completely as anybody can completely do it.
All right. Thank you, sir. The matter submitted, as is the tradition of this court, will come down and greet counsel.